Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. For three decades, state funding for mental health programs was on its way up. Since 2007, however, the upward trajectory reversed, with states cutting a combined $1.8 billion from the public mental health system. In Ohio, Governor Kasich's proposed two-year spending plan doesn't change that course, at least in the long run. Coming up later, we'll hear from Terry Russell, the interim executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Ohio. Right now, we welcome Columbus Dispatch reporter Kathy Kandisky. Kathy's been covering mental health budgets for many, many years, and this is no exception. Thanks for joining us, Kathy.
Thanks for having me.
I know this budget's different from any that I remember. It's not simple. It's not laid out. It's not necessarily clear where the cuts and where the increases are coming. So why don't we start out by talking about the state of mental health coverage and mental health care in Ohio, you know, since 2005, 2007.
Well, as you mentioned in your intro, that the last two-year budget, the budget that we're in right now, cut significantly in mental health services. And a lot of people, as a result, have kind of fallen through the cracks and aren't accessing services at the local level. And this has been a problem, obviously, because we – you know, there's real problems as a result. People aren't getting the care they need. People aren't getting the meds that they need. A lot more people than probably need to are ending up in places like nursing homes and prisons and other settings because they're not accessing care. So there's been a lot of concern for the last 2 years about the state of mental health. And, of course, going into this budget, there was grave concern given the fact that the state was facing an $8 billion deficit that mental health would suffer further cuts. My initial read of the budget is that it's pretty much stayed level. They're tinkering with the system. There's changes with the system. But as far as the amount of state aid, it's actually going up a little bit the first year, 4%. And then it ticks down, the state aid ticks down the second year of the budget for mental health services. So I don't think mental health is going to be much worse or much better immediately as a result of this budget proposal.
Reduced. What are the policy changes or initiatives that Governor Kasich has introduced in his budget? One of them is integrating health and mental health benefits.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest, well, I'll tell you what I think is one of the biggest changes and how it's going to impact services, we'll have to see. But currently, currently, the mental health services are managed by local Adam H. boards, Franklin County and all the counties. Most of the counties, that's how it works. So the state gives money to these local boards, and the boards provide services. What's happened in recent years is that most of the state aid going to locals is being spent on Medicaid match, the state match for treating Medicaid patients. The state pays roughly half of what the cost is. So in a county like Franklin County, they've actually had so much cost of Medicaid that it's eaten up all their state aid, and they've even have to use some of their local levy revenues to cover that. This budget changes that system. The state is now going to take control over payments for Medicaid. So they're not going to pass that money, that state aid, to the locals anymore. They're just going to keep it, and they're going to pay it themselves. They're going to assume total responsibility for Medicaid match. This is going to help a county like Franklin County that has had to spend about $4 million of its own money for Medicaid match. But how it plays out in all the counties, we're going to have to wait, you know, and see, because in some counties it could be a net gain and other counties a net loss. And I think that's what some of the advocates are concerned about, is how it plays out. And depending on what money is available locally is what services are going to be available, what community services these local agencies are going to be able to provide.
What about the idea of administering funds like that, at all of it at the state level, centralizing it like that?
Well, it makes sense, because in essence what the state was doing was giving state money to locals to pay the federal government. It just was a shuffle. So, I mean, I think this is something that the local counties wanted. Okay. I think it helps them. But, of course, the bottom line for these counties is, what's the bottom line in terms of dollars? And that's what they don't know yet. That's what's not clear. The money's all in this budget for mental health services, but how it's going to be allocated is what's not clear yet. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty. The initial reaction is this isn't as bad as it could have been, because the funds are at least there. But how they're distributed And who, you know, who comes out on top? That's the question.
My guest is Columbus Dispatch reporter Kathy Kandisky. We're talking about the governor's proposed mental health budget for the upcoming biennium, the next 2-year spending plan for the state of Ohio as regards mental health. We'll also talk about a little bit about Medicaid. If you have a question or comment for Kathy, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. So the state so far, it doesn't look like the budget's been cut in terms of Medicaid reimbursement for coverage of mental health issues. But they're not sure because the counties actually do lose control of the money then, right?
They do, but they didn't really have a lot of control of it to begin with because they have to pay the Medicaid match. They had to pay that. So now the state's going to take care of it, and they can use their local funds as they see fit. So that's a benefit. Of course, it's a big benefit in a county like Franklin that has its own levy,
right,
and they can use those local funds. They don't have to worry about taking some of those local funds to pay the state match for Medicaid. But, you know, how it plays out in other counties and how the state distributes the rest of the aid is what's in question. Now, you know, you were asking about integrating behavioral and physical health.
Yeah.
And this is one, you know, in addition to the money, there's some things that that this budget tries to do in terms of how services are delivered, and they're trying to, they're trying to look at ways they can provide better care, and they can get the dollars to go further. They can be more efficient. One of the things that they're doing is they're going to try and integrate physical and mental health services. They're going to try and introduce more care coordination to those with serious illness, and what that means is they're going to try and have a doctor that oversees your care. So if you have, you know, say you're not going to all these different doctors and they're not talking to each other, your care is going to be more coordinated. They're trying to do that across Medicaid with people with more chronic illness, people with lots of different things going on. And right now I know that for instance, a lot of people who suffer from mental illness also have issues with drug and alcohol or dependence. So
right.
Those two state agencies now are working at coordinating those services, mental health services, drug and alcohol addiction services. They're going to be doing the same thing on the physical health side, trying to merge and integrate physical health services with mental health services to try and improve treatment. The ultimate goal they have is to keep people healthy and try and lower costs down the road. They don't count on any savings from these changes in this budget, but they're hoping there will be savings.
Efficiencies along the way.
Correct.
Now, the budget, correct me if I'm wrong on everything, appears to reduce community drug and alcohol addiction services funding by 30% and mental health services by 16.5%. What are those numbers? Where do they come from?
I would not be able to explain that to you, I'm afraid. I wish I could.
So when they merge these two, say, drug and alcohol, well, let me ask you this. You are a Medicaid eligible. You get Medicaid for your health care. You go to a doctor. What does the state do to make sure that doctor is helping you coordinate all these different issues?
Well, that's a good question. That's what they're going to have to be doing. They're going to be – I think there's some pilot programs they have about care coordination and patient-centered care are kind of the buzzwords on that. They've got some pilot programs. This is a really important effort for our new health director, and I think I expect to see him, Dr. Wimslow, really instrumental in this patient-centered care effort. This is the practice that he ran in the Dayton area. His primary care practice was like that, and when he talks about it, you get all excited about how great the care is and how – you call your doctor's office and you get a call or an email back the same day and it all sounds fabulous. And I think that's what the state's going to be pushing. I think it's an overall trend in healthcare. And I think it's, you know, and the idea, the goal is to be efficient, to keep patients healthy, to not let things go. Like, for instance, Dr. Wimslow explained to me that if he has a patient who is, is on some prescription for some chronic disease, if everything's based on electronic records too, if that patient doesn't fill prescriptions, he gets notified from the pharmacy that the prescriptions aren't being filled. And then he can follow up by calling the patient and saying, hey, what's up? Why aren't you taking your blood pressure medication? Why aren't you taking your this? Why aren't you taking that? And the idea is to kind of close in all these gaps between doctors and services and treatments, and try and keep the patients healthy. I think, you know, I'll try and look for a stat on this, but a lot of Medicaid costs in general and healthcare costs in general are spent on people with chronic illnesses. So to keep, and a lot of those chronic illnesses like diabetes, blood pressure, things like that, you can control. So if they're able to keep people healthy, I think that the idea is that they can save a lot more money in healthcare by avoiding emergency visits, hospitalizations, you know, worsening people's conditions, more illness and things like that. I think they're trying to do that in mental health as well. That's the goal.
We did invite the mental health director for the state of Ohio, and she's testifying today on the bill. And we, of course, can appreciate that. We will. They've assured us that she wants to join us, so we're going to take her up on that as soon as possible. This won't be the first conversation. This is the first. Maybe it won't be the last on this topic. So if you have any questions or comments, though, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about Ohio's proposed mental health budget over the next 2 years. For the biennium that begins on July 1st. You can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page if you want to post your comment there. We're going to take a break right now and return to our conversation with Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. And then also joining us will be Terry Russell. He's the interim executive director for the National Association on Mental Illness in Ohio. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, going after WikiLeaks and what's going on with Army Private Bradley Manning. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 o'clock here on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. It's 47 degrees in downtown Columbus. A beautiful day today, sunshine and a high of 66. Clouds tonight, a low of 52 degrees.
Support for WOSU 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, presenting Goldie Hawn for the 2011 Keyholder event on May 11th at the Ohio Theater. Tickets and more information online at womensfundcentralohio.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Returning with us for this segment, Kathy Kandisky, the Columbus Dispatch reporter. Kathy, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And also joining us now, the interim executive director of the National Association on Mental Illness in Ohio, Terry Russell. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann, for having me, Dave.
What is your general assessment of the proposed two-year spending plan that the Governor Kasich's put forth on mental illness? Mental health care, I should say.
First of all, I must say that a few months ago we were cautiously optimistic that the governor was listening to our message. And the budget that came out the other day absolutely is probably as good as we could ask with an $8 billion deficit. I think the communities have spoken by giving a lot of information. There's been a lot of news around mental illness, and people are starting to get it. And I think to be one of the few departments that received a slight increase in this environment is somewhat amazing. And we really want to thank the governor for recognizing that. And as important, the director of the Department of Mental Health, she has been a real supporter of the new director. So we're cautiously optimistic again. But at the same time, we must emphasize that the system is still grossly underfunded, and people with these terrible biological based brain disorders don't have a lot of alternatives out there. And especially as it comes to those things that we all need, which is the basic services, such as housing and case support and medication monitoring, all of those things are still not there, and there's not enough money to start those unless we can convince the local communities to give high priorities to the community support services that are needed for all these people out there with these illnesses.
What's the community support like for – there's 50 local boards, right?
Right.
What is the community support like for them across Ohio?
Well, it's so different from one community to the next. To be honest with you, Franklin County does a very nice job with their community housing network, and they have a good case management system. But you go to other parts of the state, and basically the people that once would have been in our state hospitals or once they're in our state hospitals or would have been released into the community really have been left to wander the countryside. There's really no community support system, which is unfortunate because it's in the law in 1988 when the Mental Health Act was passed. They said there would be a community support system that would offer the services that these very sick individuals would need, and they just never were developed. And that's why the system's in crisis. I think Kathy had a great article back in October, front page in the Columbus Dispatch, that talked about the transparency of or a system that is not transparent, and it's basically a system it's an illusion of treatment. We use that somewhat in our advocacy effort, an illusion that there's treatment out there, and the fact there isn't. This new budget really doesn't do much to help those who are not on Medicaid. Those on Medicaid, the governor really took a giant leap by moving that to Columbus, and we agree with that, so it's not 50 different ways of managing Medicaid. We applaud that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also applaud it because it puts mental health right with health. And as I've said often on your show and other places, that if you suffer from schizophrenia in the state, you die 25 years earlier than most people. Mortality rate is just terrible. And it's not because of their mental illness. It's because of all the other health problems. And so this putting Medicaid under one umbrella, making sure their health care and mental health needs are met is significant. But unfortunately, not everybody with these illnesses are on Medicaid. And it's those clients that aren't on Medicaid that will really not be able to get the service they need. Plus, there are many services on Medicaid that are not paid for Medicaid. We're working with the director, Tracy Pluck, at the Department of Mental Health right now on a possible Medicaid waiver that would help fund through Medicaid some of these services, such as housing or housing support.
Like as they do with nursing home.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mental health has been discriminated against for years, and the reason the federal government did that with Medicaid is because we had a lot of people in state hospitals back in the history, and they did not want Medicaid to be used by people living in state hospitals. So they restricted the use of Medicaid for some of basic services that these people need, and we never got that changed. But we're going to ask for a waiver, and I think the new director is really behind this. So
why didn't they want people in state hospitals using Medicaid? What was the philosophy
behind
that?
They just thought it would be the cost.
Okay.
And what was really interesting, they did not make that same exception. They made an exception for DD services, used to be MRDD services.
Department of Developmental Disabilities,
right. And all of their institutions, they allowed the Medicaid use, and still out in the community have a number of waivers that give the individuals with these problems the basic services they need in the community through Medicaid. We've never been able to break through in the mental health. And in all honesty, we have housing, for example, people who serve both mentally ill and mentally retarded. And the people with the DD services are basically easier to take care of and easier to deal with than some of the people with the mental health.
Well, I suppose that arguably there's examples of, you know, on both sides that it's not really a competition, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. And we applaud that they do that for the DD services. The problem is they've never done it for the mental health.
Let me ask you, because you mentioned that some of the biggest, most expensive are the most severely ill people.
Right.
And the Kasich administration decided to put the kibosh on plans for a mental health hospital in Cleveland. They're saying that it costs something like $300 or $400 for a taxi cab ride from where most of the people who need the services live to where they can get the services now in Summit County, which is the only place they'll be able to get them. What's your take on that?
Well, we were very concerned when this first came about because they were going to build an $82 million new building in Cleveland for the mentally ill in that community. We have always been concerned about the current facility because it really isn't.
Which has been shut down now.
Yeah, and it should have been shut down.
Mm-hmm.
It was in pretty bad shape. And costing, it was my understanding, a tremendous amount just to keep it open.
Because it was so old and inefficient.
And when,
right?
When we were asked for our opinion on this, and we certainly gave our opinion, we said that we had basically two major concerns. The first concern is that the Mental Health Act of 88, we closed a lot of hospitals.
Right.
There are not enough crisis beds or long-term beds available in the state for the severely mentally disabled. My membership, my families who have loved ones who need care can't get someone in a hospital, and when they're in a hospital, they're let out too early and right back for the family to try to take care of the situation. So we said that they could not stop the capacity. We had to have the same capacity, and they agreed to that, that there'd be the same number of beds available. They would transfer the bed from Cleveland into over to Summit County. Now, we know that the community...
So they've changed the same number of beds, but the policies that are moving people in and out, churning people through the system, that hasn't changed. So when you're talking about just moving the bed somewhere else, it's a burden on people who come from far away. And most of them come from Cleveland.
Right. And that was our second concern, is how do families... One of the biggest problems in our business is this illness is so tough that families don't know what to do. And after a while, they just really have to ask somebody to step in. And sometimes there's not anybody there. And many times the family gets lost in the lives of their mentally ill patient. That's why I think we see so many people on the streets. We see so many in prisons. We see so many in the nursing homes,
mm-hmm.
because they don't have the family supports that they need. And this could make this worse, that people can't come in from Cleveland. Now, we are working right now with the department in trying to find a method that we can develop a van services, maybe even through NAMI up in Cuyahoga County, where people could come someplace and there'd be an ongoing transportation of families into the hospital and back. I also, though, want to state that the reason we haven't taken we're not opposed to this per se, is it did save significant dollars that can be used for community support services that I keep asking for in the community by making this move. And if it would have been a hospital that was really meeting the needs of Cuyahoga County that was being closed, we'd probably had concerns. But again, this was one of those old state asylums that we just always felt was inappropriate.
It is just hard for me to imagine a city the size of Cleveland to not have a mental health hospital, you know, with the state having them spread out over the states. It just seems like one would be there. Now, of course, I think the one that remains is going to be almost in suburban, like kind of between Cleveland and Akron, isn't it, Terry?
Yes, and let me also say the other reason I'm not as concerned as some is that Northfield, which is part of the North Coast, that hospital is probably, in my opinion, the best hospital in the state. They have a campus approach. It's not a big institution. You go in and there's different cottages. It really is a nice facility.
And they're going to increase the number of beds there.
Yes, they are. 300.
Let me ask you this.
Beds.
When you talk about freeing up money for, you know, operational, you know, down in other places in the system, isn't the money that was going to be used to spend to build the hospital capital money?
Well, $82 million that's just $82 million of capital monies that, and that really, although it's my understanding they're going to use some of that money, not all of it, obviously, but some of that money to increase the Northfield.
To expand Northfield.
To expand Northfield.
Okay.
But there is a $4 million operation savings that can be, and it's my understanding that wasn't part of the
That would have been part of the building, which you cannot spend on operational purposes.
Right. But there's also $4 million that is operational, general revenue fund, that it's my understanding is going to be used for more community supports in Cuyahoga County so that we can serve those clients. Those clients don't stay at Northfield but a short period. It's all acute care almost.
Because of the way the system works.
Absolutely.
Which you would like to see change.
Oh, I'd love to see it changed.
Yeah. Let's take a call right now, 614-292-8513, if you want to give us a call, if you have a question or comment for our guests. Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch and Terry Russell of NAMI and Julius from Columbus. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks a lot. And
you bet.
When you asked the question about the funding for mental health and drug abuse assistance being cut significantly, and I believe her name is Catherine. She couldn't answer the question. I think the reason being is because the state plans on putting all those people in prison, because it's a lot of people. My experience isn't experienced as an expert or anything, but I know a lot of people in prison have mental health symptoms.
I think it's something like 46% of the inmates in prisons suffer from some kind of mental illness.
And they're putting people that have drug abuse problems in prison, and they're going and they're planning. The state is planning on increasing that. And instead of giving them help that they need,
I don't know about that, Julius. I mean, I think that they actually want to change that. Kathy, can you address
he raises an interesting point. And of course, Julius, you're right. A lot of people that aren't able to access mental health services or drug and alcohol services in the community end up in prison or in jails. And that's because, you know, I talked when we wrote the big story, myself and Alan Johnson, back in October. We talked to folks at the Franklin County Jail who have a lot of inmates with mental health issues, and told us that they see the same people coming through the system again and again and again. And what often happens is, you know, they're in the community, they go off their meds, or they're not getting services, they're not getting counseling or whatever help it is that they need. Something happens, there's a disturbance perhaps, whatever, and someone calls the police and they end up in jail. What the jail tends to do, at least in Franklin County, they said, is they get them back on their meds or get them what the services that they need to stabilize them. But then they go out, and it's almost like, you know, a continual cycle. And the issue, the underlying issue that you raise, of course, is the fact that they're not getting the services they need in the community. What we don't know in this budget yet is how this money's going to be distributed and what money's going to be available at the community level. That's kind of the big question. As Terry pointed out, Medicaid's covered, and if you're on Medicaid, you're going to have access to services. But if you're not on Medicaid, it's not clear yet.
Thanks, Julius, for that call. Bob from Gahanna, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Yes, one of the things that I was concerned about is the fact that they're transporting patients from Cuyahoga County to Summit County, and that's a long trip. It's 12, 15 miles. Each trip for anybody that has to go visit or to get attention seems like it's ridiculous to move it away from the city of Cleveland.
Terry, did you?
I'd like to respond to the first caller. The second caller, make no mistake that cutting a hospital in Cuyahoga County is a very difficult decision, and I think one that everybody should reflect on to whether or not the people are going to be served better. And again, it's my hope and the promises that I've been told is that the money that's saved by that will be used for Cuyahoga County to develop more services for people that are ultimately going to end up back in the county. On the issue of the jails and prisons, I think that's such a big issue, and especially since the governor has talked about the censoring, I can't say that word, the reform trying to move more people out of the prisons back into the community.
Mm-hmm.
It is so true that so many people who have no alternatives get into some kinds of difficulty and end up very short terms in our prisons. And then they're released, and it's just a revolving door. They go out and they get back in trouble because they have no services in the community. And in the budget, there is no additional money. It's a savings to the prisons that they're going to be moving people out, but they're not following any dollars to help house those people when they get back into the community and give them the supports they need to really become productive citizens.
And
what's sad is it works. If we had those services, we could keep people out of the prisons and the jails. In Franklin County, 100 people a day in that jail have no address. They come from the streets.
Mm-hmm.
That's unacceptable.
Well, the budget also, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying to reduces community drug and alcohol addiction services funding by 30%.
Well, it's my understanding that it really does. They really did get cut tremendously. They're trying to get some federal funds to replace that $30 million in federal monies to replace that. But mm-hmm. when it comes to alcohol and drug, really Medicaid, if you're on Medicaid and you have an alcohol and drug problem, you're going to be okay. I don't know what they're going to do back in the local communities of the ADMH boards with no state monies coming to them for the non-Medicaid. That probably is one of the worst parts of this budget.
Well, and how much do you care about what happens to alcohol and drug addiction services? Is this something that you work with them on as well? Because so much mental illness is connected to drug abuse, that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. The mental health, one of the problems with this illness is it is so, the symptoms are right in front of everybody. It's not, you don't know if a person has a heart condition or cancer, but you certainly know when they have a major mental health disorder because the symptoms are talking to you through voices or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Many times these individuals, because of the lack of care in the community, the lack of availability, they self-medicate. And the next thing you know, you've got a co-occurring illness, and we're talking over 50% of those with a severe mental illness. We have to do a joint. That's why they merged the alcohol and drug and mental health back in '88
right.
together for that purpose. The problem is, the alcohol and drug has never been funded. I don't think our citizens have accepted the fact that alcohol and drug abuse can be treated. Or I really don't know why, but the mm-hmm. fact is they have never got the funding. Mental health as grossly underfunded as the mental health system is, the alcohol and drug system's worse.
We have to take another break. My guests are Terry Russell of NAMI and also Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. Give us a call if you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our daily news loop e-newsletter at wosu.org/email.
This is 89.7 NPR News. And in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins. And 37 million Americans claim Irish ancestry, more than 8 times the population of Ireland. On St. Patrick's Day, we'll hear about Ireland's dramatic financial collapse and hopes for an economic renewal. Join us for that discussion beginning at 11 on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Support for WOSU 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, presenting Goldie Hawn for the 2011 Keyholder event on May 11th at the Ohio Theater. Tickets and more information online at womensfundcentralohio.org.
And it's 47 degrees in downtown Columbus. A beautiful day today. Sunshine and a high of 66. Increasing clouds tonight and a low of 52 degrees. There's a chance of rain, maybe a thunderstorm on Friday, and then a little bit of sunshine later in the day, a high of 68. There's a chance of rain Friday night as well, maybe a thunderstorm, a low of 42. Looking ahead to Saturday, partly sunny and a high of 56. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests, Terry Russell. He's interim executive director of the National Alliance on the Mentally Ill, and also in Columbus, in Ohio, and also Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment for them, we're talking about the proposed state budget from the governor as it pertains to mental illness and ancillarily to health and Medicaid issues. So give us a call if you have a question or comment. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Kathy, there are maybe not per se cuts in Medicaid, but cuts in what services are available to people who are eligible for Medicaid.
Right. The budget proposes that services available, mental health services available to Medicaid patients are scaled back a little bit. Service utilization is what they call it. The budget assumes that these savings are going to amount to about $135 million over the biennium. So it's not significant, but what it's going to mean is that, you know, for instance, instead of being eligible for 130 hours of community psychiatric support treatment, you're going to be eligible for 104. Instead of 90 days hospitalization eligibility, it's going to be down to 30. Things like this. They're just kind of scaling back some of the services that are provided. Now, they point out that they've had some work groups look at some of these, look at the benefit package and kind of make some suggestions that they base these on. So, you know, what the impact will be, we'll have to see, but they're definitely trying to scale back. They're also going to reduce rates paid to some of the providers of mental health services through Medicaid.
Terry, is that how you see it? And are those of any concern?
Oh, certainly it's of concern. However, I think changing again the administrative structure to where Medicaid is now administered by Job and Family Services and not in 50 different counties, we may get better efficiencies. We've been very concerned for years that there have been no counterbalances of what people, how they're seen in a community mental health center or wherever they happen to go for treatment. And again, NAMI Ohio is saying we really need to start thinking about those services that are not Medicaid eligible. That is the dirtiest secret in Ohio, and that is that people who once would have been in our institutions or once would have had support systems are left to wander the countryside. What are we going to do about that? Really, our state hospitals now, and even the one in Cleveland that's closing, they're acute care hospitals, and they replaced asylums, which were people, and inappropriately, were placed for too long. Mm-hmm. But they did have a roof over their head. They had meals. They had social interactions. Some of the institutions had work programs. We need to go back and say, why can't the community provide that? And the reason in the past has been Medicaid has been eating all the money up to provide counseling. And I totally support counseling and some of these services. But, you know, you can't counsel somebody if they don't have a roof over their head or if they don't have food in their belly or if they don't someone doesn't know their name in the morning. So we're hoping all of these changes, and it's really going to be left up to the local community boards. And we're going to – our advocacy just started today with the board saying you need to look at the money you have, your levies and everything else, and talk about a changing funding structure. What services are you going to provide with the meager dollars you have that serve the sickest of the sick? And it's hard to change. We understand that. And if it wasn't for the – you know, I can't say enough about the article that was in last October, the illusion of treatment. It started getting people aware that we don't have a community system. So hopefully we can all get together now and say, okay, this is the way it is. Let's start changing the system. Because if we don't, it's just going to continue a bad system. If you keep doing the same thing, it's going to continue to be bad.
Kathy? Now, Terry, you mentioned, you know, obviously the locals can decide how to spend their local funds,
right,
whether it be state aid or money that's generated locally. The budget, the funding proposal for mental health does make some recommendations, however, and that those include emergency services and crisis intervention, housing, which you mentioned, children's services, and support for people who are returning to communities from institutional settings. Those are the priorities that the Department of Mental Health is laying out for locals. I'm sure they wouldn't get a lot of argument about them.
Well, the Department of Mental Health won't get an argument because those are ours, too. That's what we've been saying. But to be very candid, those have been on the books since 1988, that those services would be available. But because of the politics within local communities, the history of what is funded and what isn't funded, for example, I really think one of the best organizations there is Big Brothers Big Sisters. Some of the boards use the mental health monies to fund that project. And our point is that is a great program, but is it the responsibility of the mental health system when we have people wandering the streets and living under bridges? We think that tough decisions need to be made about making sure those services are available.
We have a couple emails. If you'd like to email us out there, it's allsides@wosu.org from Angel. She says, I don't understand how funds for mental health treatment are ever exhausted because it is nearly impossible to get help for someone who is mentally ill if they do not have health insurance. I am confused as to what the state does at all. How does the mental health system even work? I feel like we are talking about some imaginary place or entity.
God bless her. I mean, we've been screaming as families and consumers throughout the state, who are the ones, you know, policies that are made by the bureaucracy are all nice. But at the end of the day, the bureaucracy goes home. The people that pay the price are my members, the families who have to deal with the issue without support, or the consumer themselves. And we hear over and over again, I can't get help. And we're just saying that we're dealing with an $8 billion deficit, so we understand we're not going to get the grossly underfunded system funded to the level it should be. But it is imperative that everybody that works in the system go and ask the families and the consumers, what do you need? And when you do that, they know what they need. They live it every 24 hours a day, and they know what they need, and then change the system to meet those needs. And it is not through Medicaid. Medicaid is not going to make that happen. What's going to make it happen is when the local systems say, you know what, we cannot continue to do what we're doing, and we have to change.
You know, I'll give you an example. I talked to a young father last week who had a 13-year-old daughter who had some mental health issues. And he took her to a local crisis center here in Franklin County. He's uninsured, and he's not on Medicaid. And he took her to this crisis, and she had some very serious issues. And they saw her and talked to her and made an appointment for her to come back in a month to see a psychiatrist. Well, what the father told me was, what am I supposed to do during this month? She's trying to hurt herself. She's being, you know, he's worried that, you know, she may not be around in a month to take to this appointment. She had medication after being released from a treatment center. She had medications for about 3 weeks. After that 3 weeks, you know, he didn't have the money to pay for her medication, so she went without for a while. And then, of course, no surprise what happened next. They thought she was okay. She thought she was okay. But pretty soon she wasn't okay. And getting access to the services, he couldn't do it. It was impossible and very, very frustrating. Frustrating for someone who doesn't know how to navigate a system, who hasn't had contact with the system. And in this case, you know, a single parent, which, you know, is that much harder to deal with. And a 13-year-old child to boot.
And unfortunately, Kathy, on that particular case, we advocated on his behalf. And he had to give up custody for a while just to get Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he said, I can't do that anymore, we advocated to get her into care. But her case, and I know you talked to the father, we hear hundreds, and I'm literally saying in a month's time, our office will fill hundreds of the same kind of cases. And unfortunately, a number, I can't give you the exact percentage, that person would hurt themselves, mm-hmm. or there would be a negative consequence that could have been stopped if they could have got into service. That's what I'm talking about. It's time now for a forum to be. I don't like meetings. We have too many policy meetings, but something has to be done. Everybody sit down and all come to the conclusion that we have to have services available for those in need right now. And what Kathy just said about the department's priorities, I love them. I think that's exactly the way to go. But can the department make or force, if I have to say, the local communities to take the actions needed to make that happen? Because ultimately, they're the authority by law.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple issues I wanted to bring up. One is the presumption in the budget that they cut $1.9 million in spending, and I don't know if it's per year for the entire biennium, on psychotropic medications. The assumption is that the same number of people can be served using generic drugs. And I was wondering, Terry, is everybody comfortable with assuming that generic drugs, when you're talking about psychotropic drugs and everybody's, you know, different, are you comfortable with resorting to generic for everybody?
The word there, comfortable, no, absolutely not. We believe at NAMI Ohio, and again, we are the people that deal with the illnesses. My brother had an illness that needed care. That medication is the single most important therapy that these individuals can receive. And second, making sure that they're taking those medications. And one of the problems when you change medications, and the brain is a very complex organ. So one drug doesn't meet the need of another, mm-hmm. and there's usually experiments going on. And when you find that, to change that is criminal. I mean, we fought the Taft administration back in one, by the way. They agreed with us. They were going to put a failed first, that you had to go to the least expensive drug first, and then if it failed, we go to another. Well, you can't do that in the mental health business. People die because of that. So we're going to monitor that closely. We have major concerns that, you know, what's funny, the past administration we really felt did not give us the support we needed, and it's kind of odd that we're getting, to be honest with you, that we're getting the kind of support from this governor. But
it comes after 30%. I mean, the cuts have been made in the last biennium.
That's what I'm saying, 30% cut.
Yeah.
But my point is, the only cuts that were not made in that 30% was that line item.
Mm-hmm.
It received an increase. So I think that needs to be looked at. Why did it receive an increase 2 years ago, and this year it's the one that received the cut? And I just think everybody listening to this program needs to know medication to the severely mentally disabled needs to be available. No matter if you're on Medicaid, no matter what, that young girl could not get her medication that Kathy talked about, and it almost ended up in a very, very terrible outcome.
Another cut in the budget. I think they've eliminated state funding for health clinics, which treat the poorest of the poor, people who are not on Medicaid, and a lot of mental health issues are screened at that point that otherwise would go unchecked. Kathy?
I'm aware of the cut there. I'm not aware of how it's going to impact the services provided through but obviously, I mean, you just have to believe there are going to be less services. I mean, there have to be.
Terry, do you have any thoughts about that?
Sure. Unfortunately, we have been trying to develop a better relationship with all of those organizations for the past 10 years
mm-hmm.
Because we believe that the people that we represent need all health care. And those for the poor, those are the best. So there is no doubt that the cuts of those health care centers are going to have a impact on what we've been working on for years.
Pansy from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. The reason for my call, I'm a mother, a single mother with a child who has a pretty severe, or actually, I guess, a cornucopia of severe mental health illnesses. He's actually at St. Vincent's Family Centers in their partial hospitalization program for school age because he's not able to be maintained in any type of a normal school-type setting. And my question is, for children that have these problems, obviously a lot of them are covered under, you know, Healthy Start, Medicaid, but the St. Vincent's Family Centers and other places like that are trying to give support to families, to family members, such as myself, who may need, you know, some intervention for mental health illness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the vast majority of us, you know, the children are income qualified for Medicaid, but we may have private insurances that don't cover mental health or barely cover it. And my question is, how are these budget cuts, or do we even know yet how these budget cuts are going to affect the funds that are available for that? I know, for instance, I'm on a waiting list to see a counselor and to see a psychiatrist for an evaluation, you know, okay. And that's all being completely funded by the Adam H. Board because of my income circumstance. But how is this, how are these changes okay. going to affect that?
Kathy, we're running low on time, so thank you, Pansy.
Oh, my answer to that is she's fortunate that she has her daughter in a program that we think there needs to be. That's what I was talking about earlier, a community support system where she can get help. I would urge her to contact our office at NAMI Ohio and get involved with NAMI and participate in the family-to-family educational program because it will help her understand and how to maneuver through the system. And I would urge anybody that are having these problems mm-hmm. to get a hold of us. And it's a free program. It's nationally recognized. To really help families in these troubling times.
Terry Russell of NAMI, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch, get back to work.
Will do.
Thanks a lot, Kathy. Thanks to everybody for listening. My guests have been Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch and also Terry Russell. He's the Interim Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Ohio. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.